Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Happy Valentine's Day. It's Valentine's Day here. It's not Valentine's Day for you, but you could use the love and support of a Valentine's because...
You just threw me off. I was like, whoa. But yeah.
Romantic.
Had a bit of a tech issue just before. I was trying to catch up for things for the podcast and I went and got a special little bagel. And was like sitting at my computer and I got a bagel and an Americano, my fave, half calf Americano, steamed oat milk, sitting beside the laptop. And I don't even know what the fuck happened. And I just whacked it and the coffee went all over my laptop. So.
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
I was just like, oh my God, I have such bad luck with laptops. And then I turned it off immediately, turned it upside down. And then it kept like turning back on by itself. You know how like. Because I was wiping the keys to try and get the fucking coffee off it. And so the keys were turning it back on. And I was like, there must be a better way. And then had it upside down for ages. And then I was so worried I was going to have to like run to an Apple store before we recorded. But what happened was it turned back on. And then I like couldn't unlock my username. Like I couldn't put my password in. It kept telling me my password was wrong. And I was like, how have I forgotten my password as well? And then I realized, like, it locked me out. I kept doing, like, locked out for 1 minute, locked out for 5 minutes, locked out for 10 minutes. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I typed my password into my username slot. Typed my password somewhere where I could see it and it wasn't, like, blocked out. And I realized my keyboard is completely fucked. So when I type a certain letter, like, three letters show up instead.
So I'm looking on our doc.
So I actually put it on our doc.
Yeah. Goes just as spelt J split, coffee on MXY laptop, and now NOQUW. The keyboard is IJS fucked. This is giving me like Ouija board energy or something. There's something so sinister about what's coming out of this laptop now.
I know. I mean, I was so proud of myself that I cracked the code because like then to get into my laptop, I couldn't copy and paste the like correct password into the password bit. It was making me type it out still. So I figured out because there's an S in my password, and I figured out that a J comes with an S before the S. So I had to like type S and then go across and delete the little dot that I knew was a J, and like then continue onwards. And when I type a 1, something else comes up. I was like, oh my God. So anyway, got in. So we can do the pod, but I don't know about doing like
anything else
on this thing. Any work that doesn't require me just speaking at you.
I think that's a sign from your laptop that you should become a full-time podcaster. okay, so you're in New York. You've had a stressful day, but otherwise has it been pleasant? You're there for a New York Minute for Fashion Week.
It's been... very nice. So like the first day it was insanely sunny and beautiful and not cold at all. And I was like, wow, I could move to New York. It's so beautiful here. And then it basically started getting, like, the weather started getting colder and colder. And today it's pouring with snow, like snow everywhere.
Pouring with snow.
It's yeah. so cool.
That's really nice though, right?
It's beautiful, yeah, but it's hard to be outside, but it's beautiful.
Are you dressed for the snow? How did you mm-hmm. how did you pack for the elements?
Packed. I brought two huge suitcases.
That's very housewives of
you. So two chicken suitcases and a carry-on suitcase. Because I brought two long coats and they literally took up a whole suitcase by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought like this really big fluffy, kind of like similar to Max Mara teddy coat vibes of a coat.
Love.
Which it was too warm to wear until today. Mm-hmm. But it's floor length, so it's been like scraping along the snow.
Heaven.
And then, yeah, I'm trying to think what else has happened. It's been really cute show-wise. I'm just trying to, like, let me bring up the old sketch. Oh, I was deleting it as I went. I can't type anything on my computer.
oh, do you want me to get it up?
I think I have a photo of it somewhere. Let me find it. I posted on our AWD Close Friends the coffee all over the table.
Mm.
And if someone goes... Someone was like, lol, at the difference between the close friends and your normal stories. I was like, you guys get to see the fucking chaos that lives within. Finster. Okay. So, started on Friday. Oh, yeah, Helmut Lang was the first show. And that was, like, really beautiful. Very nice to see. Kalina Strada was cool. She had, like... this model with her baby bump out that looked really hot. And then she had this other model that carried a 5-month-old baby, which was very nice. And then Willie Chevarera.
Yes, I saw that. That looked very, very cool.
Yeah. So his show last season was like the show of Fashion Week, basically. So everyone was like so excited for this one. And he did before it began, he did like a video. He'd done a short film with like heaps of incredible models like Kai from London and like Paloma and stuff. And then it was just this really beautiful short film, and he kind of talked about how he wanted to kind of like directly reference like the chaos of the world right now and like the feeling of the world right now. And and then the runway was really beautiful, and he walked the finale, he like walked in the show as the final look, which was quite cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Don't typically like it when designers do. What do you like a designer to do after a show? I don't really like it when they like come too far out the door.
I know, I like a modest bow, but now I'm questioning why I like that. Do I have internalized tall poppy syndrome? I like when they look embarrassed and sheepish and they're kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. but why?
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't they stride down that runway?
No, so then Ludovic de Saint-Seren or whatever mm-hmm. came over from Paris, and he fucking, so Willie, I don't know, like Willie felt different because he was like part of the runway show, so he just looked like another model. It's not like he like waited and then came after the finale or anything. And then like he came out like as just a normal model would before the finale walk, if that makes sense. And then basically Ludovic like came out and strutted the whole runway by himself, and it was really funny. And
but I was, he's like super hot, right? Not that Willie, like he almost looks like a model. I can see that he
would love
a runway.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was like Jade energy. It was really funny.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't take this seriously, even though you're like hot, so hot and cool. A modest bow is where it's at.
Yeah, a little like pop the head out, Miuccia Prada, show the
little
fit.
Wave.
A little wave is great. A half bow. I'm into it. I liked the Ludovic leather harness because that was really crazy. He went to Andamula Mista. Did that one show with like the feathers on the tits and the skirts, and everyone mm-hmm. was obsessed with it. And before that had even gone into production, I think he left.
Mm-hmm.
What so happened? Crazy. We need a documentary.
I know. We literally need a documentary.
So now he's gone to New York instead and he's doing his sexy leather harnesses. My feeling with that stuff is it's just very sexy and cool, but I don't... It's obviously like more of a kind of branding exercise than it is. I don't know. There will be like a lot of hot, cool people that wear those clothes, but it's kind of a broader, more interesting question that I feel like we're going to end up discussing about these young fashion brands and who they're designing for and what their like plans for longevity are and who deserves to have a fashion brand and whether you need to toe the line and be commercial, like all those questions feel like they're very relevant at this New York Fashion Week.
Yeah, for sure. Ekhau Slater actually did a piece where they were speaking, can't remember where I was reading it, but they were speaking about that exact thing, like sort of basically being like, they founded their brand, I'm going to say like 12 years ago or something.
It might even be 20. I could be wrong, but like ages ago.
Me trying to type founded when. Founded queen. Okay. Let me... okay. Yeah. 2011. It's
a happy medium. Like 16.
But 15. Yeah, they were talking about how, you know, they've been around for so long. They're such a massive brand in New York, so well-known and so successful, but are trying still at the moment to, like, figure out... financially the best moves for their business. So I think they've cut down, instead of releasing like 4 collections or whatever, they're releasing like 2. They are also just, their designs this season were a bit more commercial. Like they still had all of their usual textiles and like stuff that they're known for, but just a lot, like quite a lot more pared back as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's, we can talk about Elena again, our fave girl to talk about, but she feels very, like indicative of this whole thing. So Elena Velez, we talked about her maybe 6 months ago because she'd done this big interview. She's a young designer, very cool, worn by all these huge celebrities. She did this huge piece in the New York Times, basically just breaking down and like breaking the illusion of how hard it is to be a buzzy new fashion brand, and how from everyone's perspective from the outside, she was dressing the right people, stopped in all the right places, having these very cool social media-y runway show moments. And then behind the scenes, she was always just a couple of thousand dollars away from going bankrupt. She'd taken out all of these loans, including her mum's retirement fund, which is very questionable, to finance the brand. She basically just explained how when celebrities wear the clothes, they never pay for them, and it actually doesn't necessarily lead to sales. How if you want to make things that are really good quality and made in America, you have to charge so much more money, and most people can't afford to pay her prices. And there was a really divided response to it at the time, which was some people saying it's really great to be honest about burnout and financial stress and how certain types of people get to keep being fashion designers because they have the financial means to just back themselves through like the first 5-10 sometimes years that you need to just throw money into a business to make it last. And other people really criticized her because they said, well, you're designing for a very, very niche, very, very cool, very, very, if you know, you know, fashion crowd at very, very high prices, like pieces that cost thousands of dollars. You can't decide as a designer that that's your niche and then complain that that's not making you bucket loads of money, which I think there was, both sides were valid. But she's kind of taken that energy as a bit of a like bad girl of New York Fashion Week and done this show this season, which seemed a little bit jarre.
Yeah, I don't really get it because, I didn't go. I mean, I didn't request. I'm not sure if I even would have gotten a ticket because it was at the same time as Ludovic. But she just did a presentation where basically, so like last year she did that mud wrestling exhibition that also had people like questioning it, because basically she just had everyone like ruining the clothes in real time. And then basically on Sunday night she did like this saloon like themed thing around the film and the book Gone with the Wind, which is like about the Southern Belle Scarlett O'Hara and the decline of her plantation in the South during the Civil War. And like, yeah, and so the like event was in an Upper East Side mansion, and then she had kind of like a live live talk with the Anna, how do you even say her last name?
I don't know. I'm like, she's just Anna from Red Scare.
Anna from Red Scare, yeah. And this other podcaster, Jack Mason. And they basically talked about the works, like, supposedly misunderstood genius. And basically Gone with the Wind has been just, like, hugely criticized.
I watched Gone with the Wind on the plane, because it was on the plane. And this was before Black Lives Matter and, like, this discussion of all of these films that should they be shown in certain places and whatnot. I just knew it as like a classic film and hadn't seen it before. And I was just so like deeply disturbed by it. I couldn't believe it was still heralded as this masterpiece that, I mean, yeah, that everyone's so obsessed with. It's really just bad and troubling. And this whole desire of this kind of dirtbag left thing to push back on all of these things that have been cancelled and to have this kind of devil's advocate opinion on whether they're valuable or not. It feels like the moment for that as a fashion designer to tap into has kind of passed, maybe. Like, I think that's the energy I just got from looking at that show and reading about it. It doesn't feel interesting and provocative in the way that, just to me personally.
I think that's been like the general consensus online.
Yeah.
Is that her clothes are good. Like Rachel Tashjian for the Washington Post wrote a piece about it, just being like fashion's problematic fave is Elena Velez, and then basically just being like, her clothes, all of this noise just distracted from the clothes, which are actually quite good. And then Kathy Horan for The Cut was like, I just don't really get why she'd want to align herself. She was just like, Kathy Horan was like, what absolutely did not work was the salon portion, a discussion between the podcasters. Villas may hate being labeled provocative, but when you host a secondhand salon with two individuals who insist that Gone with the Wind is hilarious and relevant satire on womanhood, and that Mitchell herself was one of the great American novelists, then you are being provocative. Blah, blah, blah. And then she said the question is, why does Velez want to be attached to this kind of nonsense? It's just making everyone just not take her seriously, which I guess is what she's wanting to do. Exactly as you said before, what she's wanting to do with her branding is to kind of be like, but that only aligns to a very specific group of people, and I doubt. And specific, it's like when you're making yourself align to that specific group of people, you better hope that they have like thousands of dollars that they're wanting to spend on your designs.
And it's like specific to the point of being quite literally like a couple of hundred people. Like it's kind of yeah, the Dime Square crowd. And I think that this is, and I obviously there's a lot of people who don't live there that are very into that vibe and that scene. But I think the problem with, it's like a broader interesting question of what's happening right now, where we can just get too bogged down in and have tunnel vision on a few key people and what we think their opinions. And I'm thinking as a fashion brand, but I guess I'm also thinking as, like, when we worked on Parfum, for example, there's this dual pull when you're trying to launch something of, you want to create something that you think is cool and credible and respectable and that your peers will like. And then you also want to create something that a lot of people see and engage with and buy into, and that make the product profitable and successful. And I think that tension is really, really hard to manage nowadays, because there's almost this feeling that to be successful, you've just got to find your niche and cater to it. But I also think that once you do that, sometimes you can lock yourself off from progressing or finding new people because you're so obsessed with this one little pocket of the world. Like, it's quite difficult to, and people get over things so quickly. So if you're the super, 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 super coolest thing for this one group of people, you're not going to be that. You just can't be that for 10, 15, 20 years. That's just not how it works.
Yeah, unless your designs are like timeless in the way of it not being niche.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess. Or unless you're like evolving in some very, very, very good way that not many brands can do. Because it's like near impossible. Like basically every brand just comes in and out. You're just lucky if you have enough kind of eyeballs and coming in to like keep you afloat in those down periods, I guess.
I feel really bad for brands in some ways now, because it feels, I just think about, say, Michael Kors, how Michael Kors is like a $1 billion brand now. He started making these very specific clothes that were very commercial and for kind of elegant ladies about town in New York in the 80s. And he would get stocked at one store on the Upper East Side and then another, and then and it slowly grew in that way. And it was very much based on catering to a certain type of woman who wanted to dress a certain way and like creating things to add to her existing wardrobe. And that's why he was able to slowly grow and build this kind of $1 billion brand and lifestyle. Whereas nowadays, I think it feels like, at least, that everyone wants to dress the same. Everyone just wants to find out who the new cool designer is and be on it first and wear the best thing from that and integrate that into their wardrobes as quickly as possible. And that idea of you just dress a certain way, and if a new brand comes in and offers a pant cut a way that you really like to wear, or a jacket in a fabric that you really like but done a different way, that you'll just then slowly start buying that for years and years and years. That's just not really how people of our generation shop anymore. So it's like really hard for a brand to scale in that way, because you're not really getting loyal customers as a yeah. rule.
And the kind of cheat sheet way of kind of ensuring that you're like ready to wear line, like your clothes, that you can continue being experimental in that sense, is having accessories that just sell really, really well. Like having a bag that people just want to buy and buy and buy and buy. Mm-hmm. And then that's often like why designers can afford to kind of be a bit more, like experimental and creative with their clothes. But if you just don't, like that, like with Michael Kors, the bags were,
mm-hmm.
and was such a huge thing, and obviously like Telfar and just so many brands like that. And if you don't figure that out, it just puts so much pressure on. But basically, yeah, there was this huge cut article that came out yesterday in the middle of New York Fashion Week, just basically about how hard it is to be an independent designer today. And it's called Hanging On by a Thread. And it talks about how, which we've talked about in the past, and we talked about it with the Elena Velez piece that came out, but just how like you can think an independent designer is doing so well because you see them being worn by all these different celebrities, and how they can like win all of these awards, but they still are one paycheck away from shuttering. And I think just this illusion with social media, like it's that classic thing of just like you never know what's going on social media. My friend said that the other day about like this couple that broke up and how everything looked so amazing on social media, and they were like, obviously it's such a dumb, obvious thing that you don't know what goes on, like that social media isn't real, but you still forget. And it's like with these designers, they can have hundreds and thousands of Instagram followers and be super trendy and be super hyped and be worn by like everybody and still just be making absolutely no money. And yeah, they talk to like all of these designers, like they talked to Willie about Fashion Week, just how it's a money hemorrhaging event, which is obvious, but he was saying like that last, in September, the samples for his show were $60,000. Lighting was $60,000. It was going to be $30,000 up until the night before the show, and then there was an issue and there had to be like more lights and the lighting team was missing in action, so they had to get a new team and pay double. And then all of the other stuff, like the seats, the security, the insurance, the venue, permits, models, catering, sometimes flights, people's transportation and Ubers, and they said that it was $300,000.
Oh my God.
It's just mental just to put on an event like that.
Yeah, and the it's so hard to say nowadays if that's actually going to land and translate, or if it's just going to be a bunch of fashion people who have a really fun time and have a party and write it up as like the best show of the season, but that doesn't, you know, trickle down to mainstream appeal and the kind of mainstream success that you would need to make off that to make that investment worth it. Like, you'd really want to be making $500,000 back to just recoup your costs.
Yeah.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's interesting from a wholesale perspective as well. Like in this piece, someone said 10 years ago, Barney's could have easily placed a $300,000 order on a new designer's collection. Today, even when a department store is willing to gamble on an up-and-comer, the orders have shrunk. So this is about Sintra Martins sold a collection to Nordstrom that was wide but shallow, a lot of different styles, but only a few units each. For small brands, that's extremely expensive because every style needs to be developed, the pattern, the fitting, the pattern grading, all of which is notoriously the costliest part. So at least back in the day when department stores were huge, if you suddenly got backing from, yeah, like a Nordstrom or a Barney's or a Selfridges or in Australia, a David Jones, like that could totally save you and tie you over for a year because they ordered huge amounts. Whereas now if they want to order a lot.
Well, they were also saying here, like sometimes they used to pay up front. So they'd do like a, yeah, $300,000 order up front. And now they're saying that some of the time they won't pay. So you have to fork it out. And they said that one designer, I can't find it now, but they said one designer found that after, so they play like whoever placed an order, say like whatever, X amount of money, and they realized that afterwards, after fulfilling the whole order, the costs of production didn't even cover the order. So they lost money.
Oh my God. And it's like you could make the argument to do that because it's a major name and that looks outwardly like success. So that might be the thing that leads to the next thing, but it's also what is actually going to work.
Well, also like a lot of people have had issues with, a lot of designers have had issues with Essence for ages because Essence obviously does that amazing sale at the end of the season. But it means that as consumers, people don't buy things when they come out full price from like D2C, like straight off the designer's website. They'll instead just wait until a wholesaler, until I can't even speak, I'm so tired, until a wholesaler does their end of season sale and just buy it for half price, which is just fucking designers over.
I know, and I'm so guilty of that too. Like, I should be the target market of people who really understand the weeds of this stuff and really makes an ethical decision to buy things full price D2C from smaller brands. And I just get caught up in the fact that it's hard to unsee that you've seen something in the Essence sale for like a third of the price going up every 6 months and to not think, I'll just wait a couple of months and see, you know?
Yeah. I like just did that as well, where that, you know, that like, those amazing boots feed in Novrizova. I was like, God, I just want some Fashion Week so bad. They were just in my stupid pea brain. And then I was like, just wait. No, I was like on the Essence sale and they had none of my size. So I was like, oh, I'll just buy them off her website because that's obviously way better for the designer anyway. And then I go to the website and then because she lives like, I can't remember where she's from, but somewhere in Europe, it was not going to take, it was going to take like 2 weeks for them to ship. And I was just like, fuck, I just want them. I need them sooner than that because everything's so immediate now. And then those big department stores and like online shops just cater to that.
I know, it's really fucking hard. There's it's hard as well for, we put this totally unfair thing on student designers as well. So there was another designer in this piece who her first student collection for it was Tara Babylon. Her first student collection at Parsons had this huge, crazy, embellished, amazing coat. And it went kind of viral online because Doja Cat's stylist saw it and asked if Doja Cat could wear it to the MTV Awards. And so she kind of suddenly had this feeling of, oh my God, this is everywhere. Everyone was following her, posting about it, DMing her about it, blah, blah, blah. But the coat was so complex and took her like days and days and days to make by hand that what she had to price it at when people DM'd her to ask if she could buy it meant she literally sold one.
Yeah.
Even though like Doja Cat wore it to the MTV Awards. You know what? It's just.
And she said she worked for 3 weeks straight to get it to her in time.
Oh my God. Like, what, yeah.
Just put everything else aside from of her brand to work on this one thing so that it's seen on a celebrity and then you sell one coat.
I think.
It's quite insane.
It's insane. And I think I'm just going to say a lot of like boring things that I do feel are true, which is that there's a reason why a lot of the most iconic fashion designers that we look to now as being at the pinnacle of their career or at the pinnacle of their design credibility worked in-house at brands for a really long time. And I think there is this obsession now with, especially, I think our generation and the generation below us with having everything all at once, or this idea that there is so much freedom in owning your own brand or owning your own business or having your name attached to your designs from the get-go. And I think that we have lost a respect or a reverence for, A, like the patience of spending 10 years working in-house somewhere to learn not just a certain level of like craftsmanship, but also what it looks like from a business perspective to run a brand. There's so much to be said for that. And I think that now that is seen as less popular or less cool. You lose like the immediate clout value that we all love. And
yeah, it's also hard because brands just trend so quickly because of that. Like you'll blow up for a hot second because you're the hot new thing, like restaurants. You blow up for a hot second because you're the cool new thing that no one knows about or whatever. And then because of overexposure, which we've talked about previously, then everyone just gets over it and moves on to the next thing. And because they talk about it in the cut piece as well, like because everything moves so fast online, you can just be done if you're not like constantly evolving and changing and like, I don't know. It's fucking scary, man.
And business brain is such a specific and totally different thing. And this has always been the tension that fashion designers have had. Some of the, you know, biggest, most successful, I'm thinking of like Isaac Mizrahi, but just Halston, some of the most iconic and successful fashion designers of all time, Zac Posen, especially in New York, have literally just gone bankrupt through bad business management, either by them or someone in their business, and they haven't been able to recover because it's as much a piece of the puzzle as creating great clothes. And I was listening to a really good business of fashion podcast where Imran Ahmed was talking about how there's a really, he feels very anti the trend now of like big brands or businesses or bodies wanting to get quick publicity brownie points by having awards for young designers where they really just kind of throw $100,000 or $150,000 or maybe a bit less at an up and coming talent. And that's a huge thing and seems like a huge deal, but most of them have absolutely no idea what to do with that. And it would be a better thing to do to actually give someone a business advisor for a year or give someone a consultant that helps them scale. The obsession is with just throwing money through prizes and not actually handholding brands through, like young designers through what it actually takes to turn a creative concept into a really successful business, because they're two very different things and people don't really want to talk about it.
Lulu Kennedy does such a good job of that, Fashionista. Like, yes, that's why, yeah, it's become such an incredible, it was like started in 2000 when she just started handpicking these incredible designers from like Central St. Martin's and all these other design schools and giving them not only the money to host a runway show, but giving them like mentorship and standing beside them all throughout their career. And she's basically been responsible for like everyone. Maximilian Davies, Moa Lola, Simone Rocha, Kim Jones, like Martine Rose.
It's crazy and it's so true, because all those brands you think of with Fashionista are also successful businesses, at least from what it seems from the outside, like Nancy DeJarco and 16 Arlington and those people, they're not just trendy and cool names. They've like scaled really successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because they have someone explaining to them, you can make these amazing items that are your creative outlet that you think represent the brand, but then you also have to have fun, sexy party dresses that can sell on Net-a-Porter for under $1,000. Like, that's just, if you want to be successful and have longevity, you need to have products like that, that the girl on the street that's not obsessively refreshing Vogue runway is actually just going to want to wear and feel good in.
It's like the Dua Lipa-ification of fashion.
Yes.
You can still be cool and do choogy music that the masses love.
Exactly. I think there's something, I believe in that. That's like one of my biggest beliefs, is that I don't think things get worse when you think about them being popular. There's obviously a tension point. But my example is always that everyone's favorite TV show of all time is The Sopranos. Everyone thinks the best band of all time is The Beatles. And like, they probably are the best TV show of all time and the best band of all time, just factually, but they're also very, very popular. Mm. And I just think that like having disdain for what the mainstream wants is a bad idea, because I think actually in the main, you can't go so far that you become like Shein and you just design crap for people that anyone will want and it's lowest common denominator. There's a line. But if you're trying to make something that's very good, but you're also thinking about what a lot of people will like, that can be a very strong and powerful combination. And I think sometimes fashion's guilty of like hating the masses.
Yeah, which is lame.
Which is lame.
That's just being insecure.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I loved I love Elsa Zara so much, and I loved that show so much, and I just thought it was so fresh and interesting and smart, but it's also full of actual things that you, individual items that you would go into a store and purchase.
Yeah, for sure. I really like the Proenza show as well.
I haven't seen that
I think
yet.
Proenza like proved that I don't know, there's been such a thing about, I don't know, like quiet luxury. I think everyone's just over that, but I think because it's kind of become such an easy trend to adopt for so many people that it just feels like it's everywhere. But then Proenza's like proving that you obviously can do quiet, beautiful pieces that don't have to be, I don't even know what I'm saying, that aren't aligning to this dumb trend.
Yeah, it's really fucking hard. I have no, I mean, there's a reason I'm not a fashion designer, but I just, the pressure just every 6 months to do something that looks cool and new and interesting and gets people talking and it's respectable on the runway, but also realizing that you've got to put those things into production and people have to buy them or your business doesn't work. It's just, it's a huge amount of pressure and it's no wonder so many people get burnout.
And organizing a show and running, like if you don't have the resources to have someone doing like HR and proper management, you're like designing a whole collection, running a team of people, and then thinking of a concept for a show that's going to like cut through and not be crazy expensive and actually be worthwhile. And probably talking to like wholesalers and producing decks for like upcoming potential collaborations and like trying to find someone to invest. It's fucking mental. Like the I know people have pushed back for years against the traditional seasonal calendar and have tried to design outside of it, but then that just doesn't work either. Like when brands are just like, okay, we're not gonna release pieces to these crazy deadlines, then they can't get picked up in the stores and can't get that like injection of cash that they need. It's just,
yeah, it's like, it's such a beast that the whole how entrenched the timelines of the whole season are, even from a magazine perspective where it's basically, which I know you know, but just explaining to the girlies if they don't, like the shows happen in September and March, and then there's 6 months between the shows happening and the clothes landing in stores. And in that time, the samples from the runway show go either, of which there's one in the world, either are worn by celebrities on the red carpet or are shot by magazines or shot by influencers to build the hype between then and then. And the wholesalers and the brands that want to stock you, they all have a timeline that they do within X amount of weeks after the runway show. So yeah, it's like such a, it's just such a huge beast that you can't, occasional brands have their success being outside of that and just do have their little niche of people that they sell to directly. Mm. Like a, I mean, Mariam Nasir Zadeh still does runway shows now and again and does have a lot of really great mainstream stockists, but I think of that as someone who just has their kind of direct fan base that goes to them in store or online. But those people are like a dime a dozen. It's you kind of have to be part of the machine.
Yeah, it's a lot. So I think that even just like, oh yeah, so Puppets and Puppets just yesterday showed their last ever fashion show in New York and said they're like going to London to continue working from there because it's just too expensive here, and that they're like going to continue releasing their bags, that like iconic cookie bag. I want that so much. I was going to buy it the other day and then I was like, you can't afford this silly little bag with a cookie on it. But it just speaks to me.
I think, but you should.
Yeah, just can't afford to do a fashion show anymore. Also, like in New York, I think because everyone is kind of that like too cool mentality a bit here, it's sort of like people just always talk shit about New York Fashion Week, and they're just like, oh, New York Fashion Week is shit, New York Fashion Week is dead. And it's like, okay, well, why will designers bother to spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars to show in a place where everyone's just gonna like bitch and moan about how it's not even like nothing's going on here? That typical fashion thing.
Yeah, in London there is it seems to be a much nicer energy where people are very, very happy and proud to support young new designers, and for that to be the whole kind of purpose of London Fashion Week in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like here for example, with the Willy show, like so many people just skipped it last year because they just didn't know who he was, which I do get when you're editors, you're so busy and you're like strapped for time, and perhaps you work at a publication where it's like there's a specific, like basically with Fashion Week, so many of the editors like are basically going to shows that of their advertisers because that's an important thing to do to keep up relationships, and obviously you're going to be featuring their clothes in heaps of the shows and things, and they're not really going to any of the newer brands because obviously they're really busy. But I just am like, well, I don't know, it's just this, we were just sitting around talking about this the other day about how like it just pays to just let someone younger go who's going to be so excited, who's going to go to every show, who's probably going to do the research beforehand to figure out that, like, last season, Willy was the show that you should be at. Like, before I came here, I was, like, I Googled every single name on the schedule, which I think should be a normal thing to do before you go to Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. And all of these ones I hadn't heard of that just looked amazing, I just, like, requested tickets and, like, just went to their stuff, even though... It's because that's the thing, you just skip a show because you can't be fucked, and then you realize it cost a designer $300,000 to put on, and they literally physically paid for the seat you're sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. I think we have like a duty.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's so true. What have been your favorites that you've seen so far this week?
So I really loved Sandy Liang, which is like obvious.
Mm.
Such a like of the moment ballet core vibe, but I just think that she actually toes the line really perfectly of like kind of being trendy and like giving the girlies what they want right now with like pretty pink things. But when you actually watch the runway show, there was a lot of stuff that was like nothing to do with that trend, like very wearable, like trousers and jackets and don't know, I just think she's like a really good designer, and she's releasing a pair of knee-high boots, like this beautiful, gorgeous pair of knee-high boots that have a little bow at the end. And I was like, how does this keep happening, right? Well, you just think, how many pairs of black boots does one person need to own? But like, literally the limit does not exist. Because I'm like, every single, I just want more pairs of black. No one's doing a pair of black boots with a pretty little bow on the end, are they?
That's really cute. I went to drop off our remaining stuff at Kiko Vintage with Ari. And she answered the door and she goes, Izzy's at the Sandy Liang show, I'm dying. And then I went and looked. It looked so cute.
I
know.
Yeah, I took her little, I texted her because I took her Prada bag, and then Devin Carlson said she liked it.
Oh, love.
And I was like, so I texted Ari and told her. What else? Not because I was skipping them, but because I wasn't invited to, like, I didn't go to Proenza, but it looked like it was beautiful. Willy was a favorite. That was obviously like a standout. Ekar Slater was cool to go for the first time because I feel like I've just been like a fan of them for ages. But there wasn't anything like crazy that I loved on that runway. I also just was so, I'm getting so sick of how little plus size there is on the runways. It's fucking mental. Like, Paloma's like working overtime, and even at Eckhouse, like, they literally just put her in a fucking stretchy dress. I was like, I feel like, are they not across the fact that that's kind of become like a meme now, just to have like one plus size model and to put her in like an unflattering fucking stretchy dress? So that's been kind of a letdown, especially with a couple of the things I've gone to that have been presentations, not shows, because that it's so much more obvious when it's a presentation, like, because they're just standing there.
Yeah.
And you're like, you don't have one single plus size person here. Like, how do you not think about that?
Yeah.
Or how do you not care? I thought Area was a really cool show. I'm really excited for Luar tonight. Fat Shiva's tonight, and they only cast models over 40, so that should be quite cool.
Love.
And yeah, I missed Puppets and Puppets, but that looked really cool. Everyone kind of here has been talking about like Proenza, Kate, obviously, Area, Sandy Liang. Yeah, it's, what else has happened?
Good.
Coach was like quite hectic, like, I don't know, so many people, like, as in beautiful clothes, but just so many people outside and just fucking seen to try and get anywhere.
What's the street style been like?
Pretty good. Getting quite sick of the old classic thing of, like, even just then I was looking at the Cuts street style article, and I kind of like the way they do it because they make it really selective and they ask everyone for their name and what they do, but it's also, it's literally like the plus size model presentation thing. It's like you're asking everyone what they do and all of them are saying like model, actor, or like influencer, and it's like, just pick a normal person who's not getting dressed by the brand or who's not getting free clothes from showrooms, because yeah, before Fashion Week all the top editors and all the influencers and stylists and stuff go to showrooms and borrow clothes for Fashion Week. So it's like not stuff out of their own wardrobe, which is what we were talking about on Patreon last week, as just making being a real person a bit harder.
And I just want to see what, I don't know what, like, I just feel like I must be in the minority now. I just want to see what editors are wearing to the shows. That's all I want to see. I just want to see what, like, Samira Nasser and, I don't know, Virginia Smith and, like, people who work at Mac, like, Jess Will. Like, I just want to see what stylists and writers and cool people that work at magazines who are wearing their own clothes are wearing. No one ever photographs those people anymore. Apart from, like, the superstar ones like Gabriella Kiefer-Johnson. But, like, you never see it.
Yeah. Nicole Phelps looked amazing today. She was wearing a Simone Rocha balaclava, like with the pearls all around the side of her face.
That's so sick.
Like in the snow. I was like, you look so fucking good. I saw Vanessa Friedman yesterday and she just looked really, really chic. She was just wearing black.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, we have an eye out for when we're there is like so different to who you ever see photos of. It should be an absolute requirement that Vanessa Friedman is photographed every day.
I know. The only people, it's because the street style, because this is the thing, like a lot, I mean, there are some really high up, really well renowned and respected and completely clued into the industry street style photographers and very, very stylish street style photographers. But at the same time, there are like, a lot of them just would have no idea who anyone is apart from celebrities and Anna Wintour. But I'm kind of with you where I want to see what editors are wearing, but I'm kind of just more interested in what normal people are wearing. Like, but then I'm like, who else is getting invited to the shows other than editors and influencers and celebrities? So it's like the editors. Yeah, it's like the really high up editors, but also just like any cute, stylish girlies who aren't getting dressed by the brand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's basically just, I want to see someone, maybe it's like people who work in wholesale or maybe people who work in social media, but people who are wearing their own, yeah, exactly, their own clothes that they've styled themselves from their own wardrobes that aren't picked to get photographed. It's just what they're wearing to work. I love seeing what people are wearing to work.
Same. Also because, like, I often think, because when you're borrowing shit for Fashion Week, Laura Riley from Magazine, I skimmed it, I haven't read it properly, but she wrote a Substack about this, about just going around all these different showrooms and then how so many brands now are also giving editors, like gifting editors one specific accessory, like hundreds of them, so that it will be put in the wrap-ups of like, this accessory was everywhere this Fashion Week, this must-have is so, it's so crazy. But she was just saying that, yeah, she got gifted like all of this stuff to wear, and I was thinking that must be so time consuming, because not only are you getting like an influx of brand new clothes that you don't know how to style because you haven't had them in your wardrobe, but yeah, well, that was all I had to say, actually. Because you're getting, like, a whole new bunch of clothes that you've just, that just get thrown on your door. And unless you've borrowed a full look that you style all together, like, isn't that just so stressful coming home and being like, how the fuck am I going to wear X, Y, and Z? And then I have to wear it because I borrowed it. And then I have to dry clean it afterwards and then return it. Who has the time?
Exactly. And I think if it's, you can just see when someone's wearing something that's not theirs, in a bizarre way, unless it's like you fully got the run of the store and got to pick something really specifically for yourself, it tends to be
like a nice coat.
Yeah, just one thing you can wear with other stuff. Like, generally, if you've been loaned things, there's a sense when you're, I don't know, I feel like you can feel it. That's why the people that we like the most, it just feels like they're wearing their own stuff.
Yeah. I had something else to say. Oh, yeah. Someone, I was looking at that best street style from New York Fashion Week. Actually, I put it on the Afterward Drink Stories. I'm just going to find it there. I screenshot the comment because the person wrote, not a critique of the specific article. I just hate that street style has come to mean celebrities and nipper babies styled by professionals and then photographed on the sidewalk. Boring. I want to see what the real people are wearing.
Agree.
Yes, Charlie.
Boring.
Boring in caps. I liked it.
Ooh, I know exactly who this person is. I know exactly their energy. I know, it's true. I want to just go and be a street style photographer.
Yeah, I put Charlie for sure listens to AWD.
Yeah, definitely.
Boring. I know, yeah. We have a cute street style photographer for Rush, who's like a friend's little sister.
Nice.
Not nippo baby, but connection baby. Mm-hmm. She's like a friend's little sister, and she's a Māori photographer. And I was like, yes, the Māori's going to Fashion Week. And got her along. And I've just been kind of like, for the most part, sort of just going really... She goes to me the other day. It was quite funny because I'd been going early to like hang out with her so she's not alone and also to help her get the right people. Because I was like, don't get distracted by like the crazy looks because they're being really loud and you feel like you should photograph them. Like, just get actually chic, cool people. So I've been like, and also she doesn't know who like people are. So I've been pointing people out. But
I'm going to go through that. I want to see that one. That's like the kind of vibe that I want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Today, she's actually, speaking of Michael Kors, she'll be outside the Michael Kors show right now.
Oh, nice. That'll be a frenzy.
Yeah, I know. I was like, go to that one because it'll be... Oh, she texts me. She goes, there's a full-on protest here. It's crazy. Ha ha.
That's crazy. Ha ha. Oh, this looks really cute. I'm just going through now. Really good pics. A lot of full skirts.
Lots of long skirts on the runway as well.
I wish I could wear a long skirt. They don't suit me. They all copied your AWD live show look.
No, what I was thinking about when I was thinking about full skirts is like long pencil skirts, which is what I'm seeing heaps of on the runway right now. Like floor length little pencil skirts, either with a slit or without. I actually bought from the sale that I was trying to buy the cookies bag at. I bought a Mariam Nasir Zadir long, like cute long skirt.
Love.
That I wore the other day. But we must go. I have more to say, but let's save it for the Patreon. I have some funny tidbits. And I also really want to talk to you about the cart piece that came out today about people returns, like the return grift.
Yes.
People buying shit and returning them. They just did like a huge piece on it, which is exciting.
Very exciting. See you on the Patreon for behind the scenes Fashion Week gossip, everyone.
BTS goss girlies.
You'll want to hear.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.